Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Oh, this is part four. Where's one? Where's this thing? The next one. Okay, just starting back from bottom of 45. The central impressions the mind receives from the material world are colored by the residual material concepts and ideas held within the linga sharir from the many previous lifetimes of the jiva. Right, so depending on, it means how you perceive the world is based upon how you have dealt and seen and dealt with the world in the past. Right? So your previous samskars will then give will color how you look at the world, right? Means whatever you value that is based on your previous activities, that's how you're going to view the world, right? So that's okay as long as, you know, all your impressions are pure devotional service and you're viewing it through that, then there's not a problem. But if it's not that, then it will tend to taint it. That's why it's so important to be able to take everything back to authority. Right? Because otherwise, the problem is on our own, we'll tend to just go by what we feel and what our experiences are and everything like that. Right? Okay, so thus, this coloring of the conditioned mind is materialistic and not transcendental. Mundane intelligence then analyzes this colored display of information presented by the material mind to discern whether such information is acceptable or not. Right? Acceptable meaning according to whatever the formulas of discrimination that we've accepted. Right? Still, it goes back to the mind, because here is just showing how one process of thought is working. Right? But it's still, you've already accepted and rejected different things. So what you've accepted and rejected is how your view of things will be colored. And then how the intelligence will decide what is good and what's not. That's also has been previously accepted by the mind. Right? So if we accept, yes, we'll look at everything from the view of Shastra, then the intelligence will look like that because the mind's already accepted. Right? But if we have some other idea, like everything's going nice, but we have what they call these buzzwords, you know, buzzword, right? So you get to a word, and the word itself has this whole volume of meaning, you know? And so, therefore, it changes everything. So just when you get these, then you completely change how what's acceptable, not acceptable. Does that make sense? So the intelligence would go, okay, this section doesn't have any buzzwords in it. It's okay. This section does. We don't accept that. Does that make sense? So all the intelligence is doing is then seeing, okay, what are your options within what's here? I pulled in this information, and now what are my options that I could do? And those options are basically within what the mind has accepted as okay as option. But it's the intelligence that discriminates and shows, okay, these are the things you can do. Right? Does that make sense? Then the faculty that in the final analysis accepts or rejects this analysis of the material knowledge is the mundane false ego. Right? Because then according to my identity, I'm going to accept, make a final acceptance of it. Right? But remember, all this is categorized as mind. Right? But within it, there's the faculty, the intelligence faculty, the false ego. So these are the different way the mind is functioning here. So just like if I'm not a devotee, then I would do things, you know, that's in line with how I'm not a devotee. The particular mundane thing. Now, if I'm a devotee, then the ego would look at it that way. Right? Okay, I could do this, but that's what I used to do, but I'm a devotee, so I won't do that, so then I'll take this option. Does that kind of make sense? Right? Because otherwise, so many options are there that anyone can do, but there will be something that everybody else is doing that you won't do because you're false ego. Like, you know, I'm not doing that, even though everybody else is doing that. Or your ego is different, that you don't care, so I'm doing it even if no one else does it. Does that make sense? So like that. These three material elements, man, buddhi, and ahankara, energized by the presence of the jiva within them, amalgamate to produce a mundane second identity called the linga sharir, which becomes so strong that it veils the actual eternal spiritual ego of the jiva. Right, so by the jiva being there, remember, because the intelligence is the closest aspect to the soul, right? So that's where the energy is coming. So that's reflected. The light of the soul, the consciousness of the soul, is reflected by this subtle body, right? It's like a mirror. So the more it's covered, the less consciousness it reflects, right? The more it's clean by piety, the more it reflects. So that means why it'll be more in goodness or more passion or more ignorance, right? But we're trying to make it completely clean so there's no modes, so we can actually see who we are as the soul, right? We're not identifying with what's reflecting. It's just like you can use a mirror, but you don't identify with the mirror. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole idea. So then here is that because it's getting that it's reflecting the consciousness of the jiva, it appears to be conscious. So that's why we relate to it. Right? We can relate. Oh, it's conscious, and so making all these decisions and doing all this kind of stuff, then it's, does that make sense? We think, you know, this is me. Right? Because if it was just dead matter and did nothing, you know, you probably wouldn't think I'm the rock, right? You know, you're sitting there going, well, how are you doing, rock? Hey, come on. What's that matter? You don't like me today? You know, it's like, you know, it doesn't do anything. But when it's reflecting the consciousness, then it's very easy to think that we're that, right? So just like the Mayavadi saying, I am that, meaning I'm Brahman, the material says, I am that, meaning I'm the subtle and gross body, right? Yeah. So that veils the actual spiritual ego. So that's why that's one of the first things that you deal with, because the final point of why you'll make a decision is the ego, right? Because the mind, so many sense opportunities are there, but according to ego, you'll take them or not. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So mind makes kind of a rough sorting of what is...
And no, it sorts it down to something specific. Yes. Then the intelligence goes through... means, in other words, so many things are coming in, but the mind will go down to a certain one because of its previous experiences, why it would choose that. Right? So either it's something that's good, so it wants to take advantage, or it's something that's bad, it wants to avoid. But it's according to the previous. Then the intelligence will give what are the opportunities, and then the false ego will then okay, this is what you'll will take. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when we say the mind accepts or rejects, it's already the whole process. It's already done that, you know. And as you're saying, the false ego is a faculty of the mind, you know. So that's where that part is going, you know. But then the mind, the false ego makes that decision. But then it's the mind that does the final thing and engages the senses, right? So it starts with the mind. It goes back to the mind.
Yeah.
Right, but it's just there because the false ego is not going to engage the senses. It's not the false ego is not the master of the senses. The false ego is the body, but I engage my activities. The mind accepts things according to my body. You know who I am. So does that make sense? Yeah.
But the senses are connected to the mind, so that means senses, mind, intelligence, mind, false ego, mind, and then the activity.
Basically, yeah. Yes, it'll always go. But it's also depending how you're doing. It's just the mind's making the decision. See, in more technical but simplified form is that the mind pulls in through, it means the senses pull in for information. That's the first stage. Then the mind reduces it down to a singular thing because the mind can only work with one thing at a time, right? Then the third thing is that it takes from the intelligence, the memory. Okay, what is the past experience of this, right? So you know how to judge it. Then the next is that then a decision is made according to that past experience. And then the fifth stage is then the mind then engages the senses in that decided point. But now finer points are within there is. It's reducing it down, but it's reducing it according to its previous samskaras. And in that fourth stage, when it makes a decision, it's making, I mean, well, in the third stage, using from the memory, but that's still samskar.
Mm-hmm.
It still thinks it's accepted. So it's still, depending upon the mind, what is the realm within what I decide are my options. And then that fourth stage where the mind is then making the decision what to do, but it's based on the false ego, right?
Mm.
And then again, the mind engages the senses, right? So in other words, here we're showing the three, not so much, means just what functions they each do, but we're not so much showing the mechanics of the whole senses and everything like that. That comes up in other places like that. So the point is that this becomes an identity, and that identity is fueled by the consciousness of the jiva. Otherwise, it wouldn't function on its own. It means the universal, amount of mind or ego in that is not conscious. It's not doing anything. It's only because a small portion of that is then attributed to the jiva that, therefore, that part seems to be conscious. Right? It means the covering of the universe is not known as conscious. Right? But that's like, you know, a big pile of mind. Right? You know, and the final one is eat false ego. It's the biggest. Right? With that. Since the jiva is eternally related to the transcendental sun, Sri Krishna, as his integral part and parcel, the jiva's original spiritual ego is similarly eternal. When the soul attains liberation, this original spiritual ego becomes uncovered and is overtly manifest, right? Because otherwise it's not manifest, but now you actually see it. However, as long as the eternal spiritual ego of the jiva remains hidden by his linga sharir, his identification with the material world will be the more pronounced and his spiritual ego non-assertive and practically absent. Right? Being nominal, the linga sharir of the jiva is covered by his stula sharir, which executes the desired kriya, actions of the bound jiva. Right? Because the linga sharir is making all the decisions, but it's the body that actually does them. Right? The stula sharir then becomes identified with its false temporary ego in the form of status, position, etc. within the social system of Varnashram. Right? Does that make sense? So the body becomes identified according to your position. So according to your position in society in that, That's the false ego that you're going to decide, I do these things or I don't do these things. Right? You know, means when the person was young, they were a teenager, they're crazy, they're doing all kinds of insane stuff. But then they grow up, they get married, they have kids, they have a position in the society. Even though the opportunity to do the same crazy stuff is there, they don't do it. Right? Because their identity is different. You know, not that they might not think it's good, so that when the kids do it, then they don't mind it so much. You know, they do something crazy and everyone else is jumping up and down, and then they say, hey, they're just kids. Because they have that value, but because of their false ego, they don't do it. Right? That false ego. Right? Man, buddhi, and ahankar are deemed material, but because they interpret perversely the atma vritti, inclinations of the real self, the soul within, they falsely lay claim to being the sources of consciousness, knowledge, and action. Right? Right? They interpret whatever is the desire of the soul, but in that material way. And the soul identifies with it and thinks this is great. Right? Rajanath, respected master, I have now understood that the eternal form of the jiva is atmic chit, and that his limbs, features, and nature are all sublime and beautiful. In the conditioned state of the jiva, the linga sharira veils this beautiful form. Thus, the gross material covering completely corrupts and perverts the original and actual identity of the jiva. Is the jiva in his mukta avasta, emancipated condition, completely flawless? Raghunath Das Babaji, since he is the atomic part and parcel of Sri Krishna, the spiritual form of the jiva is certainly faultless, but incomplete because of the vulnerability of his extremely diminutive size. Thus, the only discernible weakness in his faultless condition is that in a close encounter with the powerful Maya Shakti, his spiritual nature can be eclipsed and concealed. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32 describes this as follows. O lotus-eyed one, those who think they are liberated in this life, but do not render devotional service to you, must be of impure intelligence. Although they accept severe austerities and penances and rise to the spiritual position, to impersonal Brahman realization, they fall down again because they neglect to worship your lotus feet. Therefore, we see that however elevated a position a liberated soul may attain, his dependent constitution remains permanent. This is, in fact, the definition of the jiva tattva. Right, he's so small, he's always dependent, but he's dependent upon the energy, right? That's the difference. It means the internal potency in the mind is dependent upon Krishna, right? But we're dependent upon Krishna by being dependent upon his energy, right? Because we're real small, right? Therefore, the Vedas reiterate that Bhagavan is the Lord of Maya, and that the jiva is, in all situations, susceptible to the subjugation of Maya, being the Tatastha Shakti. Right? So the jiva has to always be careful of that. Even though the spiritual form is perfect, he has to be very careful by coming in contact with Maya. He's so small that he can be covered by it. Right? So that's why, not understanding what it is, one may get involved, then he gets covered. But once that's happened, one goes back to Godhead. One knows, don't get too close to the Maya Shakti. It means it's on the other side of the river. Don't go to the other side of the river. Stay this side. You know, it's just like when you, a little kid goes out for a walk with the parent. You know, when the big dog comes by and you get behind the parent, you don't get too close, right? Because last time it didn't work out too well, right? Okay, yes.
The free will is the mind,
and
the intelligence, and possible. Where the free will is situated?
Free will, meaning? Because it's doing whatever it likes. Means for the jiva.
Yes.
For the jiva is his free will is whether he wants to go along with all the stuff that the mind and intelligence and false ego come up with, or he would rather look at it from the spiritual point of view.
The
free will is situated in the ego? No, the free will is situated in the soul. Because he is agreeing to identify with the the subtle gross body. So it's his free will whether he wants to identify there or identify with the spiritual. So it's his free will whether he wants to function under false ego or actual ego. Right? But the point is we'll feel that this limits our independence or our activities, but it doesn't, because we're not actually doing anything anyway, and we're perfectly happy. Right? The gross materialist, you know, doing everything what he says he wants to do, but the modes of nature are doing it all. So all he's doing is wanting to do this and wanting to do it. Like the small child is perfectly happy, you know, he's being carried around. Hey, let's go over there. Right? And the parent walks over there. He's not walking there, but it's just his desire, and so it's carried out. You know, I want to eat this. He doesn't arrange it. In fact, much of the time when he's small, he doesn't even eat it. He has to be fed. But he'll be thinking, I'm eating, I'm doing this, I'm getting whatever I want. So that's the position. So we don't mind it, right? It's just that we think that there's an independence beyond that, but we don't have it. So it's an illusion to think we have independence more than that. Right? Is that okay? So that's our choice. So we always have that choice to function under the spiritual ego or under false ego. Yes. Because we see the final choice is the false ego, is the ego. Yeah.
So is the soul deciding to identify with some of these specific processes that are going on in the subtle body, or is it just the false ego and then everything else just goes automatically?
It just goes automatically. Like you don't, like this, like there's a big sound. You don't think, well, there's so many sounds here, but that one's a little bigger, so why don't we check out what's the big sound over there? You know, it's just automatic. The mind just does that based on the previous values.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you don't hear big noises, and so therefore you wonder what it is. But, you know, if you live next door to, let's say, a mine, where all day they're just, you know, exploding dynamite and all that, some big bang goes, you don't even flinch. You know, you just go on doing whatever you're doing. You know, you're sitting there talking on the phone and bang, like that. You, what was that? Oh, nothing. You know, and just go on talking, right? You know, so
We all know that.
Or mortar shells, whatever.
Temple construction.
Yeah, what's that? What's that? Well, it's just the Lebanese. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay, summary of chapter 16. Nitya Dharma Sambandhabhidayam Prayojana, Part 4, The Jiva Swallowed by Maya. Okay.
Really getting into it.
Yeah. I think we got, does this go all the way through? Yeah, it's still Sambandhabhidayam, Part 7. So 19, 20, there's 20. 20 is Part 8. Abhideya. Okay, Sadhana Bhakti. Yeah, so this goes for quite a while, but not here. Okay. Next morning after awakening, Vrajanath was contemplating the hope that perhaps the Lord would help him escape his material entanglement. He had just gone out and taken a seat in the courtyard when a group of his young students came and touched his feet, offering him their respects and addressing him as follows. We have learnt innumerable arguments on logic from you in the past. Now our desire is to be tutored on the famous book of logic, Nyaya Kushamanjali. Right? So he's a teacher of Nyaya, so that's why he's so good at going through the things, and that's why then his teacher then is saying sometimes that, you know, you're just overdoing the logic here. You know, it's like it's not necessary to do that. Vrajanath replied unpretentiously, I have packed away all my books for good, and just like the illustrious Nimai Pandit, I am determined to take a new path. You should approach another teacher. At the same time that the students were leaving, Sri Chaturbhuj Misra came in to see Vrajanath's grandmother with a marriage proposal for Vrajanath. It's all happening today. Okay. Having overheard the conversation, Vrajanath thought, what a dilemma. Here I am seriously considering leaving family and home And at this most inopportune moment, along comes a marriage proposal arranged by my grandmother. Right? You know, okay, if someone else arranges it, easier to deal with it. Your grandmother arranges it, that's hard to deal with. You know, you don't mess with grandmothers, right? You know? Because it doesn't matter what you say, they don't hear you. Yeah. You know? So we had this nice proposal. Grandma, I don't want to get married. Oh, that's nice. So, you know, we're going to do like this. No, grandma. But it says, oh, don't worry about it. So this, yeah, like that. So. Yeah, so that's why it's a tough one. The question became a most contentious issue, driving his mother, grandmother, and the other elder ladies of the family to one side of the dispute. On the other side, Vrajanath found himself alone. The entire day became wasted in argument and counter-argument, and eventually the evening descended almost unnoticed. However, soon rain clouds announced their presence with deep rumbling and bolts of lightning, which served to mute the loud discussion. A heavy downpour soon followed, and so it became impossible for Vrajanath to go to Mayapur that day. Early next morning, the continued contention on the marriage issue again spoiled Vrajanath's mood and appetite. Not until after dark could Vrajanath leave his house. He then hurried to the little kutir of Raghunath Das Babaji and, falling flat on the ground, offered prostrate obeisance. It's a slight little interesting note, is that here it says it spoiled his appetite. So that means there's a fight going on in the family, right? Dispute going on. There's Vrajanath on one side, all the ladies on the other side, okay? Now, typically speaking, who's cooking? The ladies, okay? But it spoiled his appetite. It didn't say that he's been fasting since the day before. So that means even if there's the dispute, still the normal activities go on, right? It just means that it's... Does that make sense? You know, it's just so... Eating, all that goes on. It just means that maybe they're not talking to him, but, you know, eating is still going on. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. The revered Raghunath Das Babaji said, "The rains must have kept you from coming last night. I am very happy that you have come now." Vrajanath burst out saying, "Dear Master, suddenly I have been faced with a serious problem, which I would like to explain later. For now I request you clarify a certain question. The jiva is of pure spiritual substance. Why then does he have to descend into the degraded material world?" A gentle smile appeared on Raghunath Das Babaji's lips, and he replied with a sixth look of the Dasamul. Like before, it was simply explaining the jiva tattva and how things work. It wasn't describing, it was describing how the situations the jiva is in. If he's covered by illusion, this is how it works. If he's covered by this, but the jiva is himself transcendental. That's the whole point of the previous chapter, right? Then the next section is about the conditioned living entity. Right? Then it will be about the liberated. Right? So in other words, you can't understand what's conditioned and liberated unless you know what the jiva is. Right? Okay. By his sarup, the jiva is the surrendered servitor of Sri Krishna and is meant to serve the Lord eternally. The conditioned souls who are alienated from the sarup are wallowing in the illusion of false pride and material enjoyment. They have rejected Sri Krishna. Hence, they are being penalized by the Maya Shakti, who binds them with three chains in the form of the three material modes. Furthermore, she covers the sarupa of the jiva with the subtle body and then the gross body, thus imprisoning the jiva in the excruciating cycle of karmic reactions, which at times heaves him up to heaven or pushes him down to hell. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the sixth dasamo. In Goloka Vrindavan, Sri Balaram manifests unlimited Nitya Parshads, eternal associates, belonging to the jiva category for the service of Sri Krishna. Similarly, in Vaikuntha, Lord Sankarshan manifests unlimited Nitya Parshads, also of the jiva category, for the service of Sri Narayan. These Nitya Parshads are eternally engaged in serving their object of worship, the Supreme Lord, who is absorbed in rasa. They are eternally situated in their sarup, remain constantly engrossed in satisfying their beloved lordship, and ever possess enthusiasm and affection for the Lord that never diminishes. They are forever extremely spiritually potent. Being imbued with the chit shakti of the Lord, they have no connection with Maya. They are even unmindful of her existence. Also, countless infinitesimal jivas emanate from Karanodakshay Mahavishnu, lying within the causal ocean, whose glance impregnates the Maya Shakti. As these jivas are the neighbors of Maya, they witness her variegatedness. The symptoms of the general mass of jivas, as discussed earlier, are also present in these jivas. However, because they are minuscule in size and situated at the margin, their constitutional nature is to look at both the material world and the spiritual sky. Their marginal condition makes them vulnerable because, up to this point of time, they have not been reinforced with chit-bala, the strength of spiritual potency, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, their worshipable object. Right? In other words, their marginal position is strong because they haven't come under the control of the chit-shakti. Because once they're imbued with the chit-shakti, then they become more powerful than Maya. And they're not interested in Maya. Right? But until such time, then they're vulnerable because now they're minuscule in size. So Maya's great, right? And the chit potency is great, but it's a matter one can look at both. Right? One means that element of surrender, and working under means the surrender. So everything's based on relationship, dynamic personal relationship, right? And so that means you're going to have to function within, considering the other person, always working within that context, never not working in that context. While Maya means you can simply look at the situation and what you can get from that situation, right? You don't have to look at the personal aspect. Right? Because even if you look at people, you can look at it from, they're just basically active paraphernalia for getting done what you want. Right? In other words, if I'm looking at it that Krishna and his associates, because the associates are only interested in Krishna, so Krishna and the associates and surrender into that circle, then that's one thing, because Krishna is the center. The other is you can look at the same situation, but look at it with yourself as the center. That it's about you, what you can get from it, rather than what you can add to it. Right? Krishna is the center, so what can I add to this? Or I'm the center, so what can I get from this? That's the two basic views. Yes? Yes, yes. But I mean, even if you're associating with devotees coming in the parampara, then you're in touch with the chit potency. That's why it's working. That's why one is being influenced out of Maya into the spiritual platform. So, because you're even contacting people who may not even be initiated, and they're talking and explaining the philosophy, and you're getting convinced and developing faith. That's because the chit shakti is there. The initiation means you're committed to. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have marriage. That means you're formalizing the commitment, right? Because if the commitment wasn't there, then on a good day, then of course you're together. But if it's a bad day, then you may say, well, there is no, you know, specific connection, so it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? But when there's marriage, then you can say, no, there's a commitment here. So if it's good or not good, it's still connected. So the same initiation is just the same kind of process. That's what samskara is for, is so that there's an understanding that there's a commitment to this. That's why in the liberated platform you don't require pancharatrika initiation, because if the soul decides to commit itself to, you know, a particular thing, there's no maya to stop him. There's nothing to get in the way. Right? There's no modes of nature, so there's no need of having a formalized ritual to say that that's there. Does that make sense? Right? So you have this ritual, and everybody knows about the ritual. Right? Otherwise, then, you know, the person comes into your room, there's a picture there, you know, that's the guru and that. You know, they go, come back a week later, there's a different picture there. You know? You know, so every week they can come and there's a different picture. Right? Does that make sense? So, So, but if there's actual pancharatric initiation, when they come in and there's a different picture, they would ask why there's a different picture. No, he's my guru. No, but you took initiation. No, it's okay. This is a formal initiation. I can't do like that. You know, but otherwise, you know, it'd just be, you know, when they smile, then their picture's there. When they're not smiling, someone else's picture's there. You know? Like that. So you have a whole line of, you know, pictures. So depending on the one, that's the one that's in the front today. You know. Yeah. So that's why the initiation. So. Yes.
From this description, it appears that the different, like, jivas of the same nature that we learned from the previous chapter.
Mm-hmm.
But then here, according from where they come from, their position is very different.
I was wondering if this question was going to come up. Because as we went through, I just kind of kept reading. No, just to see if it would come up. Like that. This is of those who read, then this is the point of contention amongst those of the jiva falling. Right? See, the thing is this, but notice one thing here. This is what's not noted. This means the answer. In Goloka Vrindavan, Sri Balaram manifests. Similarly, in Vaikuntha, Lord Shankarshan manifests. Okay. Yeah. Also, countless infinitesimal jivas emanate from Karana Daksha Mahavishnu. It's the same person. It just depends upon the office. So the point is the manifestation is there, but depending upon what your mood is, then that's actually the nature of you know, Balaram that you're interacting with. Does that make sense? Just like Krishna is there. Now, Krishna's standing there, he's standing there and he has one hand on the shoulder of a cowherd boy. So is Braja Krishna. And the demon is over there snorting and, you know, doing something with his foot, you know, like that. So, but in relating with him, he's Vasudev. So in the same point there, the boy next to him is Braja Krishna and the demon in front of him is Vasudev. So it depends on how you relate to him is how he reciprocates. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yes. So the point is the nature of the jiva is such, but the point is he takes an interest in the spiritual, then immediately he's under that chit potency. So then that's Balaram. Right? If that's happening in Goloka, then it's Balaram. If it's happening in Vaikuntha Lila, then it's Sankarshan. So basically, you're looking at it, it's you're talking about Karana Dakshay Vishnu and Baladeva, Karana Dakshay Vishnu and Sankarshan. Because Karana Dakshay Vishnu is Sankarshan, just as whether he's Sankarshan in the mood of I'm God or I'm the mood of the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that it's a matter of our mood, then, how he manifests, because it's the same person. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it still comes up to our choice, because otherwise, then we'd say, then Karana Dakshay Vishnu, we were made like this, but even there, it's you know what I'm saying. So then, what's the problem? These other ones are made like that. Why were we like this? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of the how we respond. Does that make sense? Means if you're there in the Goku Lila, right? And so then in this case we're taking, you know, Krishna and Balaram are there. So if we're interested in that, then it's Balaram. If we're not interested in that, then it's Karana Dakshay Vishnu. Because he's the lord of the material creation and he's the one who glances over Maya. Because it's not a matter of location. That's the thing. That's what I was mentioning before. Is whatever is discussed by our conditioning, we'll always try to put it back into time and place. But it's actually consciousness that makes a difference. Does that work?
So, is this depends on the previous consciousness that Jiva has, then it appears in different...
I mean, that's another thing, is that, of course, if he's already been in the material world, then he'll come back and he'll be going through the cycle, like this. But we're talking about that first position. But the point is it's in the Leela with Balaram, but the point is that... how you're dealing, then he reciprocates with you as Balaram or as Mahavishnu. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's like you have the deities. We see them in love, that's Braja Krishna. We're at Mangalarti because we're supposed to be. We're at the Darshanarti, we're supposed to be. We're doing Arti because that's our service. Right? We want to please Krishna, we have devotion to Krishna, but it's not based on our love for Krishna. It's based on that this is what we're supposed to do. Therefore, they're reciprocating with us as Lakshmi Narayan. It's Radha and Krishna, but they're reciprocating as Lakshmi Narayan. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what I'm meaning, is that Balaram is all these three. So depending upon how you're looking. Because the point is you look at something, you're looking at the facility, then you're looking at Mahavishnu. You're looking at the relationships on the spiritual platform, you're looking at Balaram. You know, does that make sense? Because in manifestation, it appears that there's that particular tendency. Because the souls are independent, so they can make that choice. So, does that work? You know, that's taking a very broad kind of thing. Yes.
It means that the mood was not inherent in the dream. It
means which mood?
If it's coming from Balaram.
No, I mean it's not inherent. I mean, you're not made that you could fall or some you could not. Jiva's a jiva, but the jiva himself has a mood.
And it cannot be changed.
Of course, it can be changed. That's why we're sitting here. We're changing it.
No, I mean the original one. Where are you going to? Vaikuntha Bek or to Goloka Bek?
Oh, that means you can if you want, but it's just you're coming from there, so naturally that's where you like to be. You know what I'm saying? You know, people like to go back to the country they're from. No? So it's just the nature. Does that make sense? Yes.
We were describing earlier how our decisions are based on our previous experiences. So how this first decision, how is that made?
That's why it says previously somehow or another. Mm. You know, it's not that you have some special app or something and you check it out and what are my options. Mm. It's just somehow or another that one turns away. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, you made the statement that the jiva has potential to be Krishna conscious. So
means this natural position is love of God. But the point, it's just like when the baby's born, it naturally gets attached to the parents. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's just the normal thing. You know, but it could get attached to something else. The parent's not there, so it gets attached to a dog or something. You know? Does that make sense? Or to the nurse or to the... You know what I'm saying? Like, you have people who go... They're more close with their nurse than they are with their parents. You know? like that. Like, you know, does that make sense? You know, like, it's not an uncommon thing. I mean, now, I'm not sure, but previously, it was a very common thing that the little kids here in Mayapur would speak Bengali before they would speak their own language. You know, because there's always the local ladies are, you know, taking care of them and this and speaking to them, so they pick up Bengali first. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Must be big suck for mothers.
Yes. So you have that aspect. You also have the aspect, means you do have this subtle aspect of that means is the Lord understanding this, so therefore you may be manifest from different aspects. Right, because the nature is the appreciation of awe and reverence, therefore you're manifest from Shankarshan. Or the appreciation is direct devotional service, so you're manifest from Balaram. Or the thing is you're not quite sure, or the tendency is to more self-centered, so you're manifest from Shankarshan. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that somehow or another, the decision is up to the jiva. It's not that you know, the ones that are made that way, so therefore they won't. It means they can. You understand? Prabhupada is nitya siddha. He never was conditioned, right? So that would mean he's manifest from Balaram, right? But when that pastime, when he was in New York, and he was, you know, moving with this more aristocratic group, and they invited him like this. And they, you know, sat him in a room and everybody was there, but they had invited this one lady, because somehow or another this lady was always around the scene, and somehow or another all the other, you know, yogis and swamis before, somehow or another got involved very intimately with this lady, this particular lady. So she was, you know, she specialized in, you know, Indian swamis and yogis, right? So the thing was is that, you know, you could understand the quality of the Indian spiritualist by his by this lady.
She's a litmus test.
Huh? Yeah, she was a litmus test. So everybody's there and that, and then somehow everybody had an excuse and everybody left and it's just Prabhupada and this lady. Right, and so Prabhupada, you know, he was telling the devotees afterwards, he was just praying that, you know, he doesn't fall down into Maya. So the point is jivas are jivas, right? Mm. Not that it would, but it was just still, there's that element, just like Prahlad Maharaj says, the only thing I'm afraid of is the material energy. Though he's the eternal associate of the Lord, but still, somehow or another. Right? It's just the nature. So you do that. That must be understood is that element of making that decision is always there with the jiva. So when they're not interested, then these are the three kind of positions. Two are the same, meaning it's either the Lord in opulence or the Lord in sweetness. So therefore, Sankarshan or Balaram. But then the other alternative is the interest in Maya. Right, so the interest in Maya is Karana Dakshaya Vishnu. The interest in the Lord is either in opulence, so as Sankarshan, or in sweetness, as Balaram. Does this make some sense? Right. So basically, it still comes back, because otherwise, taking these arguments, you know, very strongly, it's because somehow another one wanted it. We want it to be that it wasn't my fault. I was made this way. Mm-hmm. Hey, I manifest from Garbhar Dakshaya Vishnu. What do you want? You know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, give me a break. You know? You understand? That's the whole thing. Or the thing. Oh, we fell from Brahman. So Brahman's a lower position than devotional service. So it's a step up. So leave me alone. Yes. You know, I'm progressing here. You know, does that make sense? So these are underlying reasons why we argue points like this so strongly. The point is we're here because somehow or another we've made the decision to be here. Like that. That's what it says. So it's time immemorial. So therefore, you know. And we, you know, so nobody knows when they came. Of course, Krishna knows, but we're not talking about Krishna here. Right, Krishna knows everything, so that's not a question. Knowledge is a matter of whether we know it or not. Right? So nobody knows when we came into the material world, therefore Nityabhata. Right? And once you go to the spiritual world, you'd be there eternally. So therefore Nitya Mukta. Right? Because one could complain, if we want to complain, no, but you know, Nitya means we are always here, but then you can't call something Nitya if it ends. So if we're going to get out of the material world, then nobody's Nitya. But then you know what I'm saying? Because the problem is, say, no, we were always here. That says, since there's a point starting when you went back to the spiritual world, at least time here, then that makes a problem. So then it's not eternal because it started.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore, that's why you don't want to apply that kind of argument.
So yes. This is because we're thinking in mundane...
time and space. Yeah. So that's what. But we only apply it on one side and don't apply it on the other. But the point is, if you're applying it one, you apply it in the other. Mm-hmm. One starts where the other ends. Mm-hmm. So the same thing or the same argument apply to both. But they'll only apply it to one. So that's not proper logic. You know. Yes.
So is it like we're eternal? So
yeah.
There's not really time and space.
Yes.
Choice.
Yes.
Like, because we seem like we keep wanting to take it back to where there's a beginning. Like, we did that at a certain point in the beginning, and so we've been.
It means there's a point that you make such a decision, but the thing is when you make the decision, then that's mundane, so then it has a time. But on the spiritual platform, the point is you've always been there, and just you're taking a time out here. And then you'll go back to there. But then the point is how you're there, because Krishna is unlimited. He has unlimited potency. Now the point is he's unlimited, but then there's a manifestation of this unlimited. Right? Prabhupada mentions the Vaikuntha plans are expanding. So every moment there's more and more manifestation. Right? So that means Goloka is also expanding. But that's the manifestation. But there's no, you know, you're talking about unlimited here. So it's not really time and space here. So it gets beyond what we can actually comprehend. So that means the jiva was always there. There may be a point of manifestation, because if a Vaikuntha planet then is manifest, that means all those personalities, all that kind of thing has to be manifest. So the point is at some point there's a manifestation of the energy. Does that make sense? So at that time, that's when you make your decision.
Can I ask a question regarding, like, if we have an eternal Swarup, like, where eternal self is with relation to the Lord, then did we at some point already experience that relationship?
No. Before? Not with Krishna. No, not with Krishna, because that's what he says, it's not imbued with the chit shakti. So a relationship with Krishna has to be based on chit-shakti. So a relationship with Krishna not based on chit-shakti, that's the material. Because now we're relating, everything we're doing is Krishna. There's no relationship that's not Krishna. You know, it's just like, you know, like the warmth of your coat, but that warmth is Krishna. So you're interacting with Krishna, your relationship with Krishna, but you don't think it's Krishna, you think it's the coat that's warm. Do you understand? So therefore, the relationship is without the chit potency. So the relationship with the chit potency. So since the jiva is not here, what do you call it? Okay, their marginal condition makes them vulnerable because up to this point of time, they have not been reinforced with chit bala. The strength appears spiritual potency by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, their worshipable object. Right? Haven't been then reinforced with that because they haven't taken it up. But as soon as they have an interest in that, because the point is if you're in Gokul Vrindavan, what's going on in Vrindavan? Right? Everybody's serving Krishna. So if you take an interest in that, why you wouldn't be, then you're in touch with the chit. Bala, right? So then it works. But if you're not interested in that, you're just interested in the scene, then you're without the Chitbala. And so just being interested in the seeing means being interested in Krishna's energy without Krishna. That means actually Maya. Though you're going through those things in the spiritual body, in a spiritual place. But it doesn't mean that your consciousness is spiritual. It's already mundane. It means you looked at the other side. The side means Krishna or not Krishna. It's not that you came, you looked the wrong way, and it was. It means it's wherever, whichever direction you look, you can either see Krishna or you can see Maya. So Krishna is this side, Maya is that side. So Krishna is the obvious natural, and Maya is the not natural. So that's why it says Maya is that other side. So the jiva starts on this side, so you could see the Lord's energy in connection with Him, and then be reinforced with this chitbala, right? The internal potency. Or one could look beyond this, right? So just like here, there's Maya. It's obvious. This is the Maya, and then you can look beyond and see Krishna. So in that situation, Krishna is the obvious, but you can look beyond and see Maya. It's just the reverse.
So then is this kind of the first time we're actually in touch with the chit?
Yes.
Like,
means you can say, if you're taking what's recent, right? Means, in other words, by Sanskrit grammar, what is just past is also counted as present. Like we can say you asked this question. Right, but actually it's in the past, but we're dealing with it as if it's present. Right, so therefore we have to go back. How far back the Bhakti Sukriti goes, you know, because that's coming in contact with it, but it's not enough that it's caught our attention. But when a volume was great enough that it caught our attention, we made the decision to have faith in Krishna, like that. Then yes, you can say this whole process, this is the first time.
And we're just picking up where we left off. In previous lives, we were already involved.
Yes, already involved, but there would be a lot of time when we're not involved, like basically 8,400,000 species of life, at least minimum, that we weren't. That's generally. Means if you're Lord Brahma now, and you're taking up devotional service, it could be this is your first life, and you've just understood that this isn't so great. So, because Krishna is the one who's teaching you, that it would be better to be involved with Him. So therefore, you wouldn't get past the one birth, and you go back to Godhead. Or maybe you didn't quite do it there, then the next life you're a Prajapati. You know, one of the sons of Brahma, or grandsons, are like this. So then you figure out, because also Krishna's there, and you know, because the thousand-headed Vishnu is always with Brahman, and so he's always hanging out with, you know, your father. So therefore, you could, you know, so in other words, Vishnu's your grandfather, you know, so you could kind of get it together. Or the next is the great sages. But if you haven't figured it out within these three, then that's kind of it. Then you can pretty much figure it's going to be 8,400,000 before you kind of figure out that this doesn't work for me. Does that make sense? Yeah. So basically, unless there's something you're not revealing, then there's a good chance that, you know, we're talking about, you know, this is the first time we're coming in contact with it. You know what I'm saying? But that's why it said, once you come in contact, you go back to the natural position you were in. You already have a spiritual form. You already have a position within the spiritual realm. It's just a matter of taking that up. You could change that, but why would you want to change it? You know? Devotees play with the idea just because I have options, you know? You know what I'm saying? It's like going to a mall. I have more options than if I go to the corner store. Right? You know, so that's all. It's just I want options. But the point is you are that person, and you have it. Why would you want something else? All it is you forgot. means the person had a position, he has relationships, he had amnesia. When he wakes up, it's not that he wants to be someone else. He's happy to be back with all those relations. Does that make sense? Right? Because the spiritual relations aren't bad. It's not that you wake up and the first one you see is your mother-in-law or something. Like that. And then you feign unconsciousness again. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you just go back to that position, whatever that spiritual form is, because Maya just covers that. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
All right, when it said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving the highest wealth to anyone, is that an opportunity that we could be interested in Goloka Vrindavan?
Means generally it's like someone's going to be interested in something that you that is of the same nature. So basically it will be attracting those who that's their position. You know.
Okay. So otherwise we will we just be awakening from that relationship which we already
have? Yeah. Yeah. You just go back to the position you already had. So if that's there, then it's there. But you see, is that it worked, you know, like Murari Gupta, he's, you know, from Ayodhya. So for him, Ayodhya and Swetadweep, then he related to that, not Vrindavan. You know, so it's just whatever is the relation, one goes back to that. So it's being offered as this, but the point is, since it's the highest position, it contains all the everything else. Right? The higher rasas and positions contain everything that everything else has. So the point is if one's interested in something else, it's already contained within that. So it's not you have to have a separate movement for those who are from Vaikuntha or this or that. We already have all that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So one mission does it all. Yeah. So
those who don't come here, they get attracted to the chit potency?
Yes. It means 9 out of 10 do.
Yeah.
We're the ones looking that farther, you know, having the vision, looking outside the box. Yeah, we were one of those. Yeah. Yeah. That's why it sounds so good. Think outside the box. Yeah, that's why we're here. We thought outside the box. You have to know which box to think outside of, which box to think inside of. Think outside of Maya. Think inside of spiritual. Those amongst them who desire to enjoy the material nature become absorbed in matter and are thus eternally enthralled by her. While those endeavoring to serve the divine worshipable object upon receiving his mercy are elevated to the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? So those who desire material nature then come under her control. Those who desire to serve their supreme worshipable object, means Krishna in whatever form, then upon receiving his mercy, they are elevated to the spiritual world. So that's the whole process we'll get into later of this purva rag and that, is that having that focus that you want that, you want to endeavor to serve the Lord, that's all you're interested in, then you get the Lord's mercy. Then you become an associate of the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Vrajana, dear Master, I understand that the jiva is the tatastha shakti of the Lord and is situated at the junction of both worlds. However, why are some jivas subsequently engrossed in material existence while others are elevated to the spiritual sky? Raghunath Das Babaji. The transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna are also present in the jiva, but up to a very small degree. The quality of free will natural to Sri Krishna is therefore innate in the constitution of the jiva and microscopic in content. When the jiva makes proper use of his independence, he remains connected with Sri Krishna. But by misusing his independence, he dislocates himself from the Lord and is attracted to exploiting and enjoying material nature. Right? So that means he has the connection, because now we're connected to the Lord, but we don't acknowledge it. So in the spiritual platform, one is connected with Krishna. But if one doesn't use his free will properly, then he doesn't become, he's connected, but he doesn't become empowered by that shit potency.
Mm.
Right? Does that make sense? So then he comes here. Footnote 1. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 4:25:25. From history we understand that formerly politicians used to employ beautiful girls who were trained as Vishakanya. These girls had poison injected into their bodies from the beginning of their lives, so that in due course of time they would become so immune to the poison and so poisonous themselves that simply by kissing a person they could kill him. Yeah. You know, when you say, you know, that's looks that can kill or the kiss that can, it means they actually were like that. It means from when they were babies, they were brought up, they were always fed poison. Small enough amount that it wouldn't actually kill them. So they become immune to it, but it would build up so much that simply by kissing or touching like this, they could kill someone. Like that. So the king always had a few of those. You don't hear much about them because, you know, it's like that. And so then when a special guest would come that, you know, another king or something, you didn't, then they would send this girl. Right? Yeah. These poisonous girls who engage to see an enemy and kill him with a kiss. Thus, there are many instances in human histories of heroes who have been curbed simply by women. Being part and parcel. Okay. Yeah, so I guess that also comes from the, what do you call it? You know, like the mafia. They come up, give you a kiss, and then shoot you. So, you know, so, you know, like that. Kind of, yeah. Tradition. You know.
At least you can do.
Yeah. Being part and parcel of Krishna, the living entity, is certainly a great hero. But due to his own weakness, he becomes attracted to the material features. Krishna bahirmukh hai bhoga vancha kare nikata sta maya kare japatiya dhare. It is said in the Prema Vivarta that when a living entity wants to enjoy material nature, he is immediately victimized by the material energy. A living entity is not forced to come into the material world. He makes his own choice, being attracted by beautiful women. Every living entity has the freedom to be attracted by material nature or to stand as a hero and resist that attraction. It is simply a question of the living entities being attracted or not being attracted. There's no question of his being forced to come into contact with material energy. Right? He's not forced, so that's the point. He's attracted or not. So that's the point. He's there. He's fully conscious. So either you're and so the senses are going to be contacting the sense objects, right? So either you're attracted in connection with Krishna or you're attracted not in connection with Krishna. It's immediate. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's not a matter of that. So therefore, then it goes one way or the other. It is simply a question of the living entities being attracted or not being attracted. There's no question of being forced to come into contact with material energy, right? Because he's not forced, because she's the other bank. So you have to go out of your way to see the other bank. Right? You're coming in contact with the spiritual energy. So it's just a matter of how you see it. One who can keep himself steady and resist the attraction of material nature is certainly a hero and deserves to be called a Goswami. Unless one is master of the senses, he cannot become a Goswami. The living entity can take one of two positions in this world. He may become a servant of his senses, or may become master of them. By becoming a servant of the senses, one becomes a great material hero. And by becoming master of the senses, he becomes a Goswami, or a spiritual hero. Right, so the spiritual heroes don't have to worry about the Vishakanyas, right? The material heroes do. Right? Does that make sense? Because Bisha means poison and Kanya means unmarried. Right? Girl that's unmarried. Right? Because these Vishakanyas never get married, right? And otherwise, who do you marry?
Maybe there's the male.
No, those days you didn't have to worry about that stuff. Okay. Rajana, Sri Krishna is Karuna Maya, unlimitedly merciful, yet why did he create such weak jivas? As a result of their weakness, they become lured into subjugation by Maya. Raghunath Das Babaji. What you say is true. Krishna is Karuna Maya. But he is also Lila Maya, dynamic and eternally engages in pastimes. With the view that the jiva could become an active partner for his various lilas, the Supreme Lord has made him versatile and capable of rising from his humble position as a marginal being to the soaring heights of Mahabhav, the highest spiritual consciousness, which is unlimited and transcendental. To make the jiva strongly determined and facilitate his ascension to this divine position, the Lord has also created the various levels of material energy from gross matter up to ahankar, which reaches its depths with misidentification with matter. Should the jiva choose the path of material progress, the inert matter presents practically insurmountable obstacles to the jiva's search for supreme happiness. The jivas who are moving down to this material entanglement, seeking only to satisfy the senses, are divorced from their swarup, and thus increasingly distance themselves from the Supreme Lord. They become more and more depraved. But the infinitely compassionate Lord, with his transcendental abode and eternal associates, descends to earth and appears before them in person to offer them the opportunity of elevation to the highest spiritual destination. The jivas who take this opportunity to elevate themselves gradually rise to the transcendental realm and acquire the same position as the Nitya Parshats. So the Lord gives the opportunity. So in other words, just as he's given him the opportunity to rise, he has unlimited pastime. So he's given him to rise from his marginal position up to Mahabhav. So that means you can also go from that marginal position into false ego. Right? But then if he's gone into false ego, he still descends with his eternal associates. Because that's, if one, he's there with the eternal associates, you get attracted by that, you develop prema. Right? So he does the same thing. He comes with his eternal associates, you develop attraction for that, then you again come back and develop prema. Vrajanath, why must the individual soul suffer so that the Lord can enjoy these leelas? Raghunath Das Babaji, once you consider that to possess and exercise free will is indeed a special grace of Sri Krishna. Inert matter is without free will, hence non-essential and extraneous. Right? So that's the problem, is we get attracted by the external. Right? So that's what Maya is. That's why it's non-essential and extraneous. It's not conscious. The jiva, on the other hand, by asserting his free will, has attained the position of lordship over the material world. Suffering and pleasure are different conditions of the mind. What we call suffering, another person attached to the same condition will define as pleasure. The final outcome of all material pleasure, however, is pain. However you define it, it'll eventually end up as pain. You know? Like that. The materially engrossed person accumulates only misery in the end. And upon experiencing the worsening of a situation, he desires undiluted, endless happiness. Intensification of this desire arouses his conscience and power of discrimination, leading to inquisitiveness and inquiry into the ultimate reality. Right? Because he's saying that material world's not offering anything, then he desires actually to be happy eternally, because he's eternal and it's his nature. Right? But because the point is you have Sat and Ananda, means the eternality and bliss. Right? So now it's just a matter of what you do situates you there in eternality and bliss, or material activity situates you in Asat and near Ananda. Right? It's not, there's no happiness and it's not eternal. So it's the activity that defines that. Right? So when that comes up, then he wants that. Then he becomes more aware and more willing or more interested in what's happening on this, on some kind of eternal platform. The attitude of sincere inquiry leads to sadhusanga, which bestows shraddha. Because as soon as one actually wants to know, then the Lord puts you in contact with devotees. Then you take advantage of that. Then you then you take up their association, you develop faith and take up their association. You don't, you've come in contact, you've learned a little bit more, you know something, and then you relax back into your material situation. Okay, leads to sadhu sangha, which bestows shraddha and thus installs the jiva in the path of self-elevation. Right, so shraddha is the actual installation ceremony of the jiva being put on the path of spiritual life. Therefore, suffering is ultimately a boon. Impure gold is purified by firing and repeated hammering. Similarly, when the jiva is contaminated by the fancy to enjoy the senses to the extreme, making him turn away from Krishna, he needs to be purified by the fire and hammering of excruciating material experiences. In this sense, the sufferings of a gross materialist are auspicious and the mercy of the Lord. Therefore, the misery suffered by the jiva in the pastimes of Sri Krishna is considered as good and beneficial by far-sighted visionaries, while the myopic materialists abhor it as deathly suffering. I guess myopic means the condition you can only see things very close. Short-sighted is myopic, okay.
Whereas the materialists, they use the term hammered for enjoying sense gratification.
Yeah, that also is, yeah.
Let's get hammered, so they actually...
yeah. True. Yes. Rajanath, I agree that the sufferings of the conditioned soul are ultimately beneficial, but presently it is very painful. Was it not within the means of the omnipotent Supreme Lord Sri Krishna to change this torturous path of material existence into an easier one? These all sound like familiar questions. Yeah. So, why it has to be so difficult? Right? So, yeah. Raghunath Das Babaji, the leelas of Sri Krishna are unlimited and variegated. Hence, this also is another of his many unique activities. When the supreme autocrat willfully engages in a kaleidoscope of pastimes, why should it be unusual for him to enact this particular pastime? If the principle of variegated leelas is kept intact, not a single type of leela can be rejected. Whatever the leela, the participants assisting the Lord have to accept many hardships and pain. Sri Krishna is the Purusha, the supreme enjoyer, and absolute master. All the upakarana, participants, and paraphernalia are fully under the control of the Purusha, and they are the working tools of the supreme creator. In fully surrendering oneself to the sweet will of the supreme Lord, it is only natural that one may have to accept adversaries also. Adversities also. If finally this material adversity turns into an auspicious state, that is far from miserable. Then why ultimately should one call it adversity? Right? It means mode of goodness is painful in the beginning and then it's very nice at the end. So if it becomes nice, why would you call that adversity? Just like why would you call it pleasure if it's really nice and it has a bad ending? Right? You know, you're having a great party, it's the best party you've ever been at, and everybody's fabulous, and then, you know, a guy walks in with a chainsaw. You know, it's like, you know, so you don't call that a great party after that. It won't be referred to the greatest party on earth. No, like that. You know, I mean, you can get it down to the video store, but it's not known as a great party. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, he's saying, why call it adversity if it actually works out? You're only calling it now because this is the part that's a problem. But when it works out nice, then it's not a problem. No? Like here. Is this a story? Okay. The boy sees the girl. You know, somehow or another they meet. Everything's very nice. They get married. They live happily ever after.
That's not a
story.
No.
Will it sell?
No.
No. Okay. Boy sees the girl, they meet, you know, then it's going great, then something goes wrong, and then they can't get together and that, or they don't want to be together, and then somehow or another chasing CERN, and then everything works out, then they get married, then they live happily ever after. Will that sell? Okay. So that's the problem. right? So we don't actually mind it as long as it has a good ending, right? You know, if it goes like that and it has some weird avant-garde ending, then there's a problem, right? You know,
have to see the sequel.
Yeah, no, even that, it'll be just as bad. Does that make sense? So then we call it good, right? If it's bad and it ends up bad, that's just the mode of ignorance. Like that. Yeah. Raghunath Das Babaji. We were here. If finally this material adversity turns into an auspicious state that is far from miserable, then why ultimately should one call it adversity? On the transcendental platform, the tribulations of the jiva, while trying to satisfy the Lord in his pastimes, are by all accounts pleasurable. Yet the conditioned soul, by misuse of his free will, denies himself the exaltation one experiences while directly assisting Sri Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. Right? So, instead he embraces Maya, who gives him only acute harassment. If anyone is to blame for this dilemma, it's the jiva, definitely not Krishna. So Krishna has these unlimited pastimes, and so in that there's going to be obstacles. There's going to be all these dilemmas and seeming adversity, right? But it always works out nice. So the point is, since it's connected to Krishna and always works out nice, no one considers it bad. But that's one's choice, is that if one's always going to see it in connection to Krishna. Because if it's connected to Krishna, it always works out, and no one finds it a problem. Right? But if you're dealing not with Krishna, then you find the problems. Right? That's the point. So the choice of that is ours. We can choose to be involved in the Lord's pastimes, favorably involved with Krishna, or we can be independent and not be involved. That's all. It's our choice. Does that make sense? So it's not that there's something else. It's our choice. So Krishna's not to blame, because here you're trying to say, but Krishna could have made it differently. No, the point is it going on like this? It's your choice.
Could that be leading to the saying, when it's connected to Krishna, in the end everything works out well. If it's not well, it's going to be in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's in connection with Krishna, yes. But anyway, everything ultimately works out. So the point is it's, once it becomes Krishna conscious, it all works out. So, but until then, it can be a bit rough. Yeah. But that's a good one to say. Vrajanath, if the jiva were not allocated his share of free will, would anything have gone amiss? Right, so then this is the next question. So then why did Krishna give us free will? It's the thing we fight over tooth and nail, is our free will. And then we ask, you know, but why, you know, if it doesn't give us problem, hey, free will is great. But if it gives us problem, why did he give us free will? You know, like that. You know, why did, you know, my dad buy such first class knives? See, I got cut. You know, if he bought, you know, only butter knives, I wouldn't have gotten cut. You know, of course, I couldn't cut the vegetables either, but hey. If Sri Krishna is omniscient, so he knew that the jiva would have to suffer if given free will. Oh, so Sri Krishna is omniscient, so he knew that the jiva would have to suffer if given free will. Considering this case, is Sri Krishna not to be made responsible for the misery of the jiva?
That's a good one.
<You know? laughs> It's like, no. Raghunath Das Babaji. Swatantratam, free choice is indeed the rarest of gems. If none of the many entities in the material world are given free choice, that would imply the existence of far fewer significant beings. And ultimately, if the jiva were not endowed with free will, he would simply be reduced to inert and insignificant matter. The jiva is part and parcel of the absolute transcendence. Hence, he possesses the same qualities as the absolute whole, but in minute measure. Right? Means he's part and parcel of the Lord. The Lord has independence, so being part and parcel means we have to have independence. So if you're going to be part and parcel of the Lord but not have any independence, you have to be dead matter. Right? And so if we were dead matter, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You know. Supreme independence is the intrinsic characteristic of Sri Krishna. And to separate a substance from its innate characteristics is, of course, impossible. Therefore, free will is certainly present in the nature of the jiva, but proportionate to his infinitesimal size. So 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair, you get that much independence. Right? But still, it's enough to get us into trouble. I guess it doesn't take much, that's what I say there. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, again, he brings it back to the jiva. Because Krishna could have made us like that. The point is he's like that. Anything coming from him is going to have that nature. Right? So therefore, if you've got a con aspect, then you have that. Because he's conscious is also unconscious. Because he's everything. Right? But we're coming from the conscious side. Right? Dead matter doesn't have these problems. They're not inquiring in this way. Right, we don't hear in history of all these things that, you know, the rocks and the everything are coming up to Krishna and asking, why is it, you know. No, they're not saying. The intrinsic constitutional presence of free will has elevated the jiva to a much higher status than matter and has made him its lord and master in the material sense. It has also favored him in the possibility of becoming the dearmost servant of the Lord. So in either case, by having this, because we're saying, oh, it's a problem. But by having this independence, it's elevated him above matter, so if he wants to be materialistic, he can enjoy matter. Or if he wants to engage it in the Lord's service, he can become an eternal servitor of the Lord. Right? It says here, dearmost servitor of the Lord. Right? So on either side, it's not a problem. Because matter is not enjoying matter. So we don't mind the enjoying matter side. We have a problem with when we're not enjoying matter. So we are enjoying because we're independent. So in the same way, we'll appreciate the eternal service of the Lord if we make that decision. It's because of independence. Does this work out? Yet, when the same jiva misuses his innate free choice and thus becomes engrossed in materialist activities, the merciful Sri Krishna is stricken by compassion and concerned about the bad fortune of the jiva. Lamenting, the Lord shadows the movement of the jiva, planning means to save him. Sri Krishna knows that his nectarian and immortal leelas are not available to the conditioned jiva, and thus, out of deep compassion, he manifests his wonderful pastimes from within the material nature for the edification of the conditioned jiva. Right? Because the jiva's made the choice. So because of this, then the Lord has his pastimes coming here. Right? Not, we see the importance of that point coming up. Because otherwise, previously it said he has this kaleidoscope of pastime. That means there's going to be nice things happening, not nice things happening. We could take that he has these material pastimes, and so just so you can have these pastimes, we have to become conditioned. No, he's having his transcendental past because he never interacts with mind. He only interacts with the internal pose. So the unlimited kaleidoscope of leelas is on the transcendental platform. Now the jiva can choose to not do that. So because he comes to the material world, then because you have to have a place for such persons, and they have to be able to deal with dead matter, because dead matter is not going to complain that it's being enjoyed separate from its natural position of being enjoyed by the Lord. Right? Dead matter is the only thing that's not going to complain. Right? Does that make sense? Like what you were talking about. You know, the man having been hammered by the material energy, then he finds that, you know, talking to the bottle or something is the only one that listens nicely, right? Everybody else doesn't understand, right? You know, or the bartender, he's not listening, you know, he's just, you know, walking around and doing what he does. But does that make sense, right? So the living entity, he has to come in where his dead matter, because it won't be bothered. Now, because he's in that position, right, then the Lord has compassion, so he comes with his associates and performs his pastimes here within material nature. Mm-hmm. So actually then it's connected that way. So the previous point about his pastimes unlimited pastimes doesn't mean material pastimes. He means he performs his activities of coming here, and that's out of compassion. It's also because the living entity wants to enjoy separately. You could also not have facility, right? Just, you know, stick him in Brahma Jyoti or something like that. And so, but instead, he has, of course, the pastime of creating the material world, but that's because the jiva wants to be here. Does that make sense? But it's out of his compassion that he comes himself within this creation, performs his pastime so the living entity can get out of this and go back to Godhead. Right? However, realizing that the jiva in his conditioned state is unable to properly comprehend his transcendental activities. That means he's calm, but he won't be able to appreciate it. Sri Krishna has descended to earth at Navadvip, appearing as the most munificent incarnation, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? Because in other, you may appreciate, may not, but as Mahaprabhu, then one can appreciate. Acting as the divine spiritual master, Sri Mahaprabhu has initiated the jiva into the supremely efficacious method for his salvation. He has explained the esoteric truth about the transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, simultaneously taking the position of a pure devotee and teaching the science of pure devotion by his own exemplary conduct. My dear boy, could one possibly think of blaming such a magnanimous Lord? The compassion of Sri Krishna is immeasurable, and the condition of the fallen souls is most lamentable. Right, so again, it goes back to the jiva. Right? Because the Lord arranges everything, and even if you made the wrong choice, he arranges for that wrong choice, and he arranges to so that you can make the right choice by performing his pastimes. But because in the conditioned state you can't take advantage of those pastimes, he's come as Lord Chaitanya to teach you how to take advantage of those pastimes. So that's a lot of compassion on all levels. So one can't blame the Lord there. One has to understand it's the jiva, he's made the mistake. Right? So the Lord's most compassionate, and the position of the jiva, that's lamentable. But it's not lost because Krishna arranges, his compassion, he arranges to help. Okay?
Yeah. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki, samaveta bhaktivrinda ki, janitai gaura prema.
Hare Krishna, dear devotees, we have an announcement. The deadline for enrollment and fees is still tomorrow, and Prabhu will make another batch of copies and hold the material. And after that, we are not taking any more enrollment forms.
55.
Thank you.